You're listening to the good.
Don't call me Paino.
The bad.
Absolute.
And the rugby.
Folded like a deck chair.
With Paino, Lord, and the Husk. I don't know what that means.
Hello, everybody, and a very warm welcome to another episode of The Good, The Bad, The Rugby in partnership with City Index, the leading provider of spread betting, CFD, and FX trading. It's good to have you all back once again. We're back in a studio. It's a bit more peaceful and quiet, isn't it, after our last 3 weeks?
Well, you say that. We've been on our own for most of the, for a little bit of it.
Yes.
He hasn't been here.
Peaceful in one regard.
Yeah.
In fact, peaceful in both regards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now he's back.
Why are you talking as if I'm not here?
I'm sorry.
We did a lot.
I know. I've seen
it was a wish list.
Bull events where you've been slagging me and making jokes, undefended. Where's my right of reply?
You can have it now. Great. Thank you very much for that. We've got a very special episode lined up for you today. We've arrived early at Twickenham on Saturday with one question in mind. In fact, I've been wanting to know for a very long time what it is like to wake up on the morning of a test match as an England player. And we've obviously got two guys alongside who did it. What did you do? 150 odd times between the two of you?
Oh, 77.
It's
152
77
times,
and 72.
152 times between you. I wanted to know, what is it like to wake up, particularly on the morning of an England
side? I thought you were going to say sleep with the bird. I was like, I can't help you with that.
Very good. Quality content is already. Obviously, so many people dream of being an England player. Very few get to do it. It was a lot of fun, actually. And I think we just about managed to get it done before the tannoy ruined everything. But the tannoy practice. There is a lot to discuss, though. Before we start talking rugby, first of all, book tour, father-in-law, yeah. Working at Twickenham on Saturday. Where do you want to start with your... I mean, your diary has been insane.
Yes, it has. The live show, James Haskell show, finished last night in Exeter. I didn't know I had it in me. Well, I did. Talking rubbish, I'm overqualified in. But to do kind of a stage show, two 45, 50-minute blocks and entertain people was so much fun because everyone had to listen to me. Right. It was perfect. And they released
were you paying them or were they paying you?
They actually paid me. People, right. This is amazing. They filled out theatres, paid me to let me talk at them.
Right.
We didn't get cancelled yet, which was great, and got to meet a load of fans that I didn't know I had.
You did that genius thing as well, didn't you? You know, obviously when you do something like this, you sell merch. He sold earmuffs. What a flanker earmuffs. And they flew off the shelves.
Actually, sunglasses and earmuffs.
Ruck me earmuffs, sorry. There was ruck me on one ear. What a... flanker on the other ear. He's run out. Sold them. Made more money off that than anything.
Book tour went wild. That's been great. Again, I haven't been sued on that yet, on that front. People seem to really enjoy it. And Richard has gone into the jungle as of last night.
Yeah.
Well, when this pod is out, it won't be last night, but on Sunday evening. Amazing. I can't wait for him to see how he goes.
Straight in jail.
Yeah, straight in jail. But I went straight into that awful camp, didn't I?
Yeah.
Yeah, which was like sleeping on the floor. I woke up on the first day and Caitlin Jenner was crying. And I was like, you're right. She goes, I don't know why I'm back here. You know, she'd already done it once and was like, I don't need this. I was like, yeah, we could have told you that. She was brilliant. But I think Richard's going into it is going to be fantastic.
How is Chloe feeling about Dad in the Jungle?
I'll be honest with you. I think it's brought up some feelings because of the media scrutiny. Obviously, for years, she had that. Now yeah. They're really interested. They're calling up every 5 minutes. Can we do this interview? We'll plug anything. And then they know they just want to ask about Richard and stuff. So I think she's... apprehensive, nervous. She's obviously really close to her dad, doesn't want to see anything bad happen, doesn't want to see him in you know, struggle in any way. I'm much more excited about it. I think Richard's brilliant. He's such a compassionate, kind, intelligent man that and also I tell you this, right, one day he said to me when I got into the jungle, when we came back and he knew he was going to do it, he said, how do you tell the time there? And I said, well, you can't, because you they cover their watches, security, when they put bags over your head so you can't see. Nobody's wearing a watch. They won't tell you what time it is. You've got no idea. There's no clocks. And so I thought nothing more of it. And then he called me up a day later going, hi, James, can I speak to you? And I was like, oh, God, this is like really urgent. And I went, yeah, Richard, I'm about to go to a meeting. He goes, well, I just need to tell you something. And I was like, okay, what's happened? He went, I figured out the time situation. He goes, if you put a pencil in the ground, you can make a sundial and at various different times. And I was like, what? Sorry, that's what you want to call me? Went, yeah, yeah, anyway, solved the problem. See you later. It was as if it was life and death. That's how quirky he is. I love the fact that he was that busy and he thought about it for 24 hours. So I can't wait for him to see what he does.
How's he figuring out where the east and west is?
I think he
can do that too.
Yeah, I think
where's the sunrise?
Yeah, where's the sunrise?
He'll have it all mapped out.
That's what I mean.
Then surely he'll have Big Ben built by the end
checked,
of the camp.
He checked. He basically Googled in Australia where the sun. Okay. Oh, not sorry. In Wales. In the UK.
Does the sun come up in Wales?
That's what I mean. That's what I said to him. What happens if there's no sun? Window. But I just think it's the shadow. But then last night, because he's got to keep the log stove burning, he goes, if you go for a wee in the night, make sure you go past, put a couple of logs on the fire. Obviously, everyone's read into it. It's a bit of a, you know, don't crap on the fire. Love it. Cheap gag straight away. All right, common denominator TV at its best.
Good on him. Did you play on Thursday? I had a message from Rob Vickerman saying, well done. He was doing commentary on your match.
Yeah,
he said you were playing with a bunch of very excited 20-year-olds.
Charity match for Rugby for Heroes. Thought I was playing in a veterans game.
Right.
Turns out I was playing the Combined Armed Forces team, which had some semi-pro people who played for like London Scottish. They were like 24 years old. One young kid smashed me and went, it's a real honour to be smashed you. I was like,
what a lovely
touch. Just made my day. I was like, thanks. Can you peel me off the car? Can you peel me off the 3G, please? My knees are oozing from the 3G pitch. So I'm still not particularly a fan of those.
3G?
When are you actually going
to
sack it off?
See, this is it. I was talking to the groundman. He was, I called it 4G. He went, it's not Astro or something. He goes, no, not Astro. He goes, 4G. He goes, no. 3G. So yeah. I don't quite understand whatever that pitch is, it hurts.
When we trained at WASP back in the day, we had a 1G. You know, it was just more sand than anything else.
It's a beach.
There was one academy kid that dived and just sanded his whole leg off. That was yet to retire off. That was gone. Leg fell off.
Do you enjoy it? I mean, how many more games have you got in you?
It was one of those where, because we weren't really competitive. Literally, first 10 minutes when we're all fresh and you've got like Salvi. We had Salvi, Delon, Armitage. We had Ryan Lamb was playing 10.
Is he still cutting? Because on the Jack Adams day, Memorial Day, Ryan Lamb looked
so
like he could
that
still
was
do
like
the
veterans playing each other. So every time he threw one over the top, someone intercepted it. Yeah. So we were behind the home post. But first 10 minutes, we scored two worldies. We're like, okay, this isn't that bad. And then the Forces guys came out with something called a game plan and pinned us back, and we had Tom Varndell just literally jumping in every single time, and they just passed it over the top or crossfield kicked it and made 80 metres every
time. That's why Tom Varndell jumps in, so he doesn't have to make a tackle. The only one and only tackle he ever made was kept Wasp up in the Premiership.
It did.
Remember that?
That's it. In the in-goal area.
Yeah, Vesti knocked it out of Vesti's hand.
But no, it was great fun. And I did say next time we play, I'm going to at least play 20 games for Minch before I go into it, so I'm actually match ready. Good. And then had a lovely week. Great few days. I did something on Thursday with Ollie Phillips, and then Friday I was at Berry Brothers for some lovely wine and an auction prize for my golf day, and then Saturday
Chateau Margaux and Petrucci were happy.
It was a 1982 Chateau Lafite. Oh, Rothschild.
Chateau Lafite. I forgot that Chateau. It was either Margaux or Petrucci.
Said in Wakefield terms. You don't get that very often with Chateau Lafite.
You can't really say it.
You can't say it.
It's come so far, anyway, because he used to go, there's either red wine or white wine. Right. You put them together,
and then you get rosé. Beer. And then obviously we had the 150th anniversary of the RFU on the Saturday night after the game.
There were a few photos
which was good. I was on. It was like we were on a naughty boys table. Myself, Lol, Jace, and Cozza was on there, and Jono was on there as well. So we had a great little time.
Not heckling.
No heckling. It was actually really good.
This was a former England captain's dinner.
Basically, it was the 150th anniversary, but only captains were invited, so it was nice. It was good to see Dylan was there, Tamara Taylor was there from the girls, and
Katie Dana McLean.
I didn't see her. So yeah, it was a great night. I snuck off with Lol and Alice with myself and Zara. Just
did you
for a couple of car
keys
beers
in
Richmond? No, stop it, you naughty man. And then we had the christening on Sunday, so it was lovely.
That was a happy day.
Yeah,
a
lovely day.
Lucas enjoyed dunking.
He did, actually. I took him swimming in the morning, so I think I'd readied him for it. So he was quite looking forward to it when the water was coming at him.
Happy day. From a happy day on Sunday to a happy day on Saturday, if you're a Northern Hemisphere fan, because it was one of the most heartwarming days of rugby that we've had in this part of the world for a long time. There have been some grim Saturdays, but this weekend was a goodie. Obviously, Scotland beating Japan. Well done to them. England got past South Africa with the last kick of the game. Wales got past Australia with the last kick of the game. And France, a joy to watch against the All Blacks. Ireland hammered Argentina on Sunday. And worth mentioning as well that Italy beat Uruguay earlier in the weekend as well. So lots to talk about. I really want to focus. I think what we shall do before Christmas is we'll do a proper round table. And we'll get a Welshman, a Scotsman, an Irishman, and just look at the lie of the land. We'll take a bit of time to do that. But I really want to focus now on England, South Africa and France against New Zealand, because they are the two games that just up in lights. How good were England in getting the result against South Africa?
Yeah, so a real game of two halves. So they were outstanding in the first half. Against South Africa, you can't give penalties away. Don't really want that many set pieces, but our set pieces stood up in those. You know, Johnny had that wee shocker on the quick tap where we quick tapped it to kick it and then dropped the ball. We had our first scrum in our own, you know, 10 metres from our own line, and we come away with the penalty. Big statement of intent. Obviously, second half rolls around and the juggernaut just started ticking off with penalties. To be fair, a lot of them were defensive penalties where they were stealing our ball. So, you know, a lot of people have talked that it was 19-5 or whatever the penalty count was. Why did we have a yellow card? But I would have said six or seven of those was probably them stealing the ball off us. You can't give a yellow card for us losing the ball. That just allowed them to get territory and get back in the game. But when we needed to turn the tide, wonderful try, great pass by Slade, great line by Marchant, and then Rafi Quirk. He'd just been charged down, hadn't he? They'd given away a penalty, and boom, he's back. Great, great support line from a nine, and scores, and it sort that sort of got us back into the game and got us back on a little bit of toe, and then the defensive effort just to win that penalty, and the ball's on the mound who touches his hair 20 times a game, and
Marcus Smith.
You know, he praised a lot of what he's been doing with Wilco after the game and talking to Faz about it. You know, he's got his head switched on and you've still got to kick him over, as you said, with a big weight. So it's a massive win for a young group of players against a seasoned, hardened South African team.
Yeah.
Immediately, every South African supporter was blaming hardships that they had, and then their teams all got it all wrong. You're like, come on, guys. Throw that in with why don't we have a player in the World Player of the Year and everything else. I think, you know, South Africa are a fantastic team. Now, hopefully they'll look a little bit at the style of which they play. But, you know, they're a World Cup winner. They beat the Lions. They're world number one.
Yeah.
It's a good team.
I think actually with both of these games in context, it's worth mentioning. I think South Africa have been away for 18 weeks because they went to Australia and then they've been over here. I think New Zealand may have completely made this up, but certainly sort of 2.5, nearly 3 months they've been on the road as well. What did you love about Saturday? We were there. We had a very good day of it. But what did you love about Saturday?
I thought firstly the crowd and the atmosphere, brilliant. I think, you know, I've said it before, the modern fan has often forgotten their job, which is just to cheer. Now everyone gets on social media giving opinions. We don't want fans' opinions. It's not what we're interested in. Your job is to cheer the place down. We know we do players' ratings. I always want to do crowd ratings. Go, right, you tweeted all this crap. Did you sing once? No. 0 out of 10. Were you positive when we, you know, 0 out of 10?
You're
going to
give 82,000 reviews.
I would love that. I'd sit and go, I'd dissect them. I'd watch the camera back. I just thought it was general. And I thought, actually, they came alive. They really made it a hostile environment. They were super positive. I thought from England's point of view, you know, we talked about Eddie Jones after the Six Nations. Everyone wanted to fire him. We needed to get rid of the whole team. Everyone was done. You know, he wasn't the right man for the job. He turned around and vocally said, listen, I'm going to change the team. I remember speaking to him and I asked him what he was doing one day. He said, I'm on the hunt for New England, mate. And that's all you sort of got in reply. And he's gone and found these kind of players. He's put Marcus Smith in. Sam Simmons got an opportunity. Rafi Quirk, Bevan Rodd, all these guys that kind of were on the periphery, some we've not even heard of before this autumn internationals, have come to the fore. And they've actually gone and beaten the South Africa side. And that accounts so much for the psychological battle. And they buried some demons. It doesn't matter what you say in front of the media. There was a lot of those players who were still haunted by 2019 because of the fashion which they lost.
Yeah.
They didn't turn up and they got schooled in the scrum. As Mike said, scrum penalty first off. They buried that team, that demon in a scrum proof coffin or whatever you want to call it. And they kind of dealt with that. And I think now it was exciting. Yes, it was close. Yes, it could have gone either way. If South Africa had got a couple of kicks, it would have been a different scoreline. But I think from my point of view, very, very positive and fun and great to be around. And when we were down by the pitch, everyone was going mad. They stayed in their seats. You know, you get the old red trousers were shuffling off normally before the end of the game. Everyone stayed. Everyone wanted to see it. I thought the players doing a lap of honour was great. And how many new caps do we get? How many players stood up?
It's 23 new caps this year.
Yeah,
Eddie Jones put in,
and he's tested them. And some players that you thought would start, he went with other ones over the top of them. And now there's a lot of team with a lot of experience there now against. you know, Australia and South Africa, and obviously that joy of kind of breaking and getting a great win against Tonga.
Okay. Did England feel lighter? Did it look like they were enjoying it more on Saturday? Is that the exuberance of youth?
Yes, I agree with that. I think the way that we scored our tries, the way that where they came from, just good play all round. People just backing themselves. I think they're in a happy place where the players are actually expressing themselves in a lot of the way. I think if they're going to look back and do a little bit of critiquing, they'll want to work better at their attacking breakdowns and resourcing that better. But you're against the best team in the world at that. So there will be negatives to take away. But as a whole, as a starting point, the tries they scored, how they looked, you know, it wasn't really a game for Marcus Smith. It was more about Marcus Smith getting us around the field. I thought we kicked a lot, but a lot of the time it was not necessarily box kicking or just banging the ball up. It was little kicks. We had a lot of little kicks behind us because we know how hard they press. You know, Max Malins caught that ball, slipped to the outside. You think he's going to go for the gap, and then he just stuck it on his, I think he stuck it on his left and put it down into that corner. It rolls out, and then they're under pressure again. So I think there was some smart kicking in there as well as the usual, the sort of boxing stuff that you get. That was the variety, and they were on top for 40 minutes, and then they found a way. What was the most, I would say, is what you'd be most pleased is the way that they found a way back into it.
Yeah.
And that's a massive plus for them.
I'd say as well, just from a psychological point of view, a lot of that team, they're not jaded in any way. So you've got the media are all on their side because they're new. So they're all being pumped up. They're having the time of life. They're in the best environment they ever would have been in with England. You know, I watched it firsthand. Eddie invited myself, Dylan and Chris Robshaw in for an old boys day. Got to see how they did it. Same intensity. Attention to detail. Everyone's smiling. Everyone's working hard. And there's no one's been dragged through the mill. Everyone's pumping Marcus Smith up. You know,
Freddie Stewart
up. Bevan Roll, all these guys. You know, Rafi Quirk. All of them are getting marching. There's not one person that was involved that's getting a bit of heat. So they're all having the time of life. Yeah, what a best experience to be. And then you go and beat South Africa. So I would get fast forward. You know, if the Six Nations doesn't go well, let's see how peppy they are after that. Because we have a ability in this country, especially through social media, of chipping away at them. I think they're in a great place, living their absolute dream, living their best lives.
Yeah. The real Boers out there, you're very welcome. Lovely to have you along. we'll remember Luger's try against Australia in 2000. I'd love to talk that through with anyone who'd like to dial in on it, because that was the moment, the last gasp against the Wallabies that almost, I mean, did it light the fires for you as a team? And how much do you see this win as sort of a similar type? Even if you don't play that well, you can still beat the best in the world.
I always say that the bigger game was the one before that, the South Africa game in second test in South Africa. Okay. But that was the immediate build on. Straight away, you've beaten South Africa in their own patch, and then Australia come to your patch and last minute
dice roll. Bullshit, wasn't it?
Bullshit. What are you doing kicking?
Brilliant
kick. Great kick. Amazing.
But I think what's interesting about that in particular is, you know, trying something at a last ditch. You know, how many times do we see teams become so browbeaten that they don't want to do it? I remember him chipping it over and like everyone going, what are you doing? He doesn't even kick. He can't kick very well. And suddenly he scores. You're seeing similar sort of moves now. You know, again, it's that's why I admire New Zealand, because win or lose, they keep their identity. I think they lost it a little bit at times where they tried to play with inside themselves. But certainly this team, even though they lost the last two games, play with that continued flair. We're seeing it with France. If you can maintain that even under the most sort of pressured scrutiny, that's the mark of a good side for me.
So it's a difficult, it's about what is your brand and staying on that brand, like staying true to yourselves. And this young team is about playing rugby, and you know, that is what they've got to stay doing. That's what they want to do. You keep doing that, you'll get the best out of them.
We're not having a great time with France at the moment, with the fishing wars and Brexit and all other challenges, but there does seem to be a bit of an entente cordiale bubbling between. I mean, Eddie Jones was very complimentary about France in his post-match comments. He said, I need to get over there, mate. They seem to be coming along a bit too well for my liking. It was just respect where respect is due. Vive la France, how good were they?
Wow. Superlatives
can't
come fast enough. They were so good. From 1 to 23, they were so, so good. I think with 9 and 10, they have got two of the players, world players of the year. They've definitely got the world player of the year. Their back row and their pack, you know, they just went after New Zealand. We talk about, you know, the South African defence smothering and causing chaos. They did exactly the same. And then throughout the back line, you know, Jaminet, people struggled to tackle him. again, a person I didn't really know anything of. I mean, I'm not someone who's watching top 14 highlights all the time. And he comes from nowhere, doesn't miss at goal. Fantastic to have in your fantasy team. Makes breaks, great hands. Out of nowhere, you know, because we were always like Bryce Dulan. We were like, he's fantastic. And then he's sort of not, I don't know, he was injured, not getting looking. And this guy steps forward. You know, I wasn't sure about bringing back Dante. And then he literally ripped up. Fiku does what Fiku does. And then you've got two wingers who just work for the team in every single way. And they are a proper team. The front row did its job. And then the front row that came on, it was like another bomb squad just came on and causing mayhem. Bamba just running over people, bumping people. It was quality.
How much Sean Edwards do you see in them?
Well, that's what I was going to say. Now, this is pure conjecture. You know, I'm very hot on people who've got nothing to do with anything, passing comment. But what I've seen, having played in France and played against many French teams, is that they have a cohesive nature. They have that kind of emotional connection. You see it in the change room with the headbutting and the stuff. But that can be quite thin. It can be quite a bit of a veneer of togetherness. And actually, when they come under pressure, because they don't
crack the shell quite easily.
Yeah, because they don't have a lot of structure to rely on. It means that when the pressure comes on, they become quite individualized. But one thing Sean always coaches, especially with his defense, is A, he will dig you out if you don't perform. And he always asks the players, say, for example, I was defending a player, people either side of you have got a role. Yeah. The way he wants you to defend, you cannot switch off. And even if I was to run up and hit someone and I wasn't to put him down and Tins was to clear it up, that counts as a positive for me. Whereas a lot of defensive coaches would say that's a miss. The way he's coaching them, you can see they're each having to take responsibility. They're suddenly playing for something bigger than themselves. And that's quite unusual in French sides I've seen, because once the emotion wears off and they're behind, they start going in themselves or losing their heads and they're not used to being dug out. And I imagine Sean in training would be, you know, demanding it for them. And suddenly they're raising their standards because they look super cohesive. And I think that's something he would have brought, the technical aspect, but also that psychological aspect of going, right, our defence is a weapon. You know, because a lot of times in France, it was an afterthought. They were very passive before. A lot of times, you know, I remember when I tried to do some blitz defence at Stade Francais and they were just like, no, drift, soak it up. But Sean would have brought that in and made them had an identity. And they look a completely different side. Then you put Gaultier, his flair and management, and Rafael Ibanez is just simmering aggression and kind of joie de vivre. It's a perfect combo for me.
And also, it's a combination of great things. You've made a huge change. You shift all the old French players out, the ones who carry, like, we expect to be involved, we're statesmen of the sport.
Politicians.
You sweep that out. You get in young, hungry, double world junior champions who all just want to get better. You put the coaching staff in that's going to build on their confidence, build on what they've done at 21s, and then give them a structure to take things forward professionally. And you put it all together and it comes out perfectly. You get what you're seeing right now. And you know, the thing is, they are all under 30. Well, I think pretty much for sure most of them are under 30. Yeah. And some even on the right side of 25. And so it could be here for a long time.
Did you see that Serge Betson was a part of the Amazon coverage and actually said one of the things that coaches have done is fight so hard to get access to all those players because, you know, we know the politics in France can be a bit like the Wild West. You know, a lot of clubs won't release players fighting for them. But they've basically got access to a fantastic pool.
Yeah,
I think the French clubs have finally dawned on that if the French team is going well, it's actually good for them. And they're getting so many opportunities and they've raised the quality of the game, but that's a big deal for them to get that and for them to be able to deliver.
There's also the under-20s generation, which won the World Championship, I think 2 years running, that's really beginning to come through. Untermat was part of that, Demba Bamba.
The whole of that pack, all of them are under 30, apart from Antonio.
Wow. Vive la France indeed. Two very, very quick questions. Who's going to win Rugby World Cup 2023?
Wow.
Twist it any which way. I mean, have you ever seen the top of the world game as tight as it is right now? When the All Blacks have lost twice in a row, the world champions have just lost to England.
Did you see that? I saw someone put out when New Zealand last lost. Was it three in a row? Have they done a three in a row one? Or has it never happened?
Oh, yeah, no. In 1998,
it was literally
run.
Like 40 years ago.
Yeah.
They live on a different planet. I still think if you look at that New Zealand team, it's full of quality and they can score from anywhere. Yeah. So they are not.
But it's the myth. If you look at what England did to them in the World Cup semi-final and what Ireland have now done to them 3-5 and what South Africa normally take a game off them a year at the moment and France are now like, oh, hang on, we can do this too. Has the myth
yeah,
eroded.
Well, yes, in some ways, because after you've been that dominant for about 10 years with a team that was just virtually unbreachable in terms of mentality and togetherness, and you can't expect it to stay at that level. No matter how good the players are that you produce all the time, it takes a special group of players at a certain amount of time to create greatness. And they had that at the start, and they had a whole squad for 10 years of it. You know, they all talked about the heartaches of when did they play? In 07, was it? Yeah,
99, 07.
They changed the policy, didn't they? Yeah. To good men make good All Blacks and all that legacy.
So it took a lot, but now you can't just expect it to stay there when a great group of players have left. You hope that you can fill the gap.
I'd say slightly differently on that. I think you are right. I just say, I wonder, you know, with New Zealand, because everybody in New Zealand wants to be an All Black, because they have the cream of the crop, and they also have, whether they intentionally do it or not, a psychological thing about leaving the shirt, you know, having responsibility. Nothing's bigger than the game. That kind of breeds that really competitive element. And actually now, if you look at World Rugby, all the teams are as fit and as strong. They've all got the same star. So what becomes differential? I think kind of the psychological stuff. And I think you're now beginning to see teams. They're actually that mystique, that power. They're kind of losing it. They probably haven't got any worse. I mean, you know, because they've got to retain the players. But I think other teams are now looking into that and stopped worrying about them and almost adopted a bit of that All Blacks mentality. Because if you were to ask what would be the deciding factor between a side, because bear in mind, everyone can beat everyone because we've seen it, it's the top 2 inches. Yet, for a long time, people serviced it but didn't ever actually do anything with it. Now, I believe that it's a real factor in a lot of these teams. And even whether they're doing it on purpose, just by the way we've progressed in conversations we have and the different approaches of coaching, we're actually working on players' psychology and it seems to be making a much of a difference. There's no, you know, we're not. I remember playing England side. You would have done the same thing. It was all about New Zealand. When we played New Zealand, they didn't give a shit about us. They didn't even know who any of us were. And also just that kind of mentality. And I think once you beat them, you know you can do it again.
I think as well, all the players are so much younger, so they have no fear. Whereas I still think you'd look at that All Blacks team, it's probably quite old compared to the rest of the teams they're playing against. Whereas and now with rugby how it is, it's you don't have the old
that
player.
Old. Geordie Barrett, 24, 5 maybe. Ricky Ewani, 24. Akira Ewani.
Whitelock's old.
Whitelock is old.
I'll tell you what's going on as well.
Brody Retallick is old.
I'll keep pulling it back. Dane Coles, second time he's done a hacker.
Do you know, I was going to say this. She's Mrs. Payne, who's watched 2 games of rugby in her entire life, the only thing she likes about the game is the Waratahs because she likes the name, said, hacker's not as good in a white shirt, is it? Small detail. Just want to get her analysis for those
that like
that.
Didn't Jacinda and Boris come up with a thing, you can't mock the hacker?
I'm not mocking it. I'm just saying it's not as effective if you're wearing a white shirt.
I was joking. What I meant was tongue-in-cheek. You can't even mention it now. Now it's another, another ring-fenced area.
I disagree with you. All the front five of South Africa are all over 30, with 3 of them 33.
South Africa or New Zealand?
New Zealand. And 3 of them are 33.
Okay, that's very interesting. I'm looking at the back line.
Point to Tindall.
Thank you.
But we always say that the piano pushers decide the game.
Piano players decide how many.
Neither
of you have answered my question.
What?
Who's going to win the World Cup in Rugby 2023? Rugby World Cup 2023.
I'm going to go with England.
if we, right now, obviously it's not going to be right now.
Yeah. Right here, right
but
now.
But if I was looking into a squad and who I'd want to be in, England are behind where France are. I would say you'd want to be in that.
And where are France relative to New Zealand and South Africa? And where are Ireland?
Ireland are upcoming fast. I think the group of players that Ireland have got, where they could go in 2 years, I'm not. This is you're asking me to Mystic Meg it, and she can.
Mystic Mike. Come on, Mystic Mike.
She never got it right. So how am I supposed to get it right?
The point, I think, is it's going to be a cracking one.
Yeah, it should be.
Amen.
Yeah. It should be.
One word. Well, you can have more than one word, but one answer on Rassie Erasmus and the ban.
Fair.
Look, I think officials personally cannot make huge mistakes, catastrophic mistakes in a game, and the only punishment they have is not to referee a good game the following weekend. Yeah. We as players are publicly scrutinised, as our coaches, it's inescapable. I think he flagged up some good points. Did he do it in the right way? No. Can we not afford to have a precedent like that set? Absolutely. We can't have people doing their own conferences, even though social media is the only PR you can control. You can't do that because you've got to draw a line, because otherwise it just becomes like the Wild West, people just running PDF displays of why everything went wrong. But I do think it shed a light, and I hope that officials, even though they do a fantastic job and they're only human, they cannot get away with ballsing up games, making catastrophic errors and just walking away with it.
Toughest job in the game, though.
It is. Oh, it is.
But doesn't happen without them. But when your TMO can't even help you out and get it right either.
Yeah, but I'd say they're underpaid, underdone, and they need that help. If you want the game to, if we're investing in the players, you need to invest in the referees, give them a structure, help them, put systems in place, and make them accountable. But also give them the tools to be the best versions of themselves. Stop letting them go off and do other things. I know there's a lot of professional ones, but if you ask them, it's sort of still not quite where they'd want it to be.
Okay.
Is Rennie going to get some?
I would imagine so.
Well, what's Rennie done?
He was not happy off the back of the Wales-Australia game this weekend. He's never bagged a referee before, but he felt the referee's decisions had an outcome.
But I bet there should be some sort of inquiry, because we've had situations where referees, we get a report back, the referee says, yeah, I made a mistake there. Yeah, that wasn't right. Yeah, that's not, I don't necessarily made public, or there isn't any kind of...
I think where Rennie's different is he's done it immediately in the aftermath of the game rather than go away and plan a 62-minute video.
Yeah.
Because the problem is with what Razzie did is we could all make a 62-minute video of all the breaks that they got and where they gave away penalties that weren't gone.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, I watch games, and New Zealand, there was quite a few in there where there was some head rolls and stuff that get missed. Things get missed.
Yeah. You can't. Human. Yeah.
You just can't.
I wonder if that's too much TMO. You get what you're given on the field. Good luck.
That's what I'd
prefer that.
And then prefer that.
They only come in for yellow cards and red cards.
I think as well, you know, allowing, you know, rugby's now, we've got to the whole point of everyone's challenging.
Yeah.
Remember we said you can't what's the word, sort of
you could give a coach's flag, chuck it in if you've seen something you don't like, and you can have a
challenge from
challenge.
Only three
you
of
get
them
one and if you are successful you keep it,
yeah,
only in particular circumstances, and otherwise you just accept the lot. And it's the hardest game on planet Earth to referee.
I agree, and that's why I've got no problem, and that's why he's got to be punished, because otherwise everyone will be doing it.
Okay. We will do a proper roundtable. Apologies, Wales fans. It was a great win for you. Possibly not the greatest game we've ever seen, but a gutsy good win nevertheless. We'll do a proper roundtable when the smoke has cleared and we can have a bit of a lie of the land pre-Christmas. I think that'd be quite good fun. But we always do things a little bit differently. And so on Saturday, the three of us were working. It was a really, really good day to be at Twickenham. That sort of magical, autumnal, crackling November day. And we got there early to answer the question, as we said a little bit earlier on, what is it like to be an England player on match day? What is it like handling the nerves and the fear, the expectation and the global audience, et cetera, et cetera? So we got there nice and early. We started at the Rose and Poppy Gates for a bit of a Twickenham walkabout to pick the brains of these two alongside around big days as England players. So it's 9:15, Twickenham match day, England against South Africa in about five and a quarter hours' time, I think that's fair to say. And you can hear already the bustle is underway, and there is something really electric about these November internationals. There is something in the air, particularly when it's South Africa in town. It's always gladiatorial when these two go head to head. There's obviously the underlying current, as you know, of that Rugby World Cup final in 2019. But the point of coming here today with two guys who've done this over 150 times between you is just to get a sense, I suppose, and a bit of a description of what it is like to live out your dreams on days like this. There are so many people around the country who will wake up on a day like this and they will plan all of their Saturday around watching the rugby. But I want to know from the two of you what it is like when you are the ones in your boots and your jockstrap getting ready to do this. So we're at the point now where the bus will arrive and the players will get off in about 2.5 hours.
It's changed a lot.
What's it like?
It's changed a lot from my day, because all this obviously wasn't here. We've already hit the fudge company up for a bit of food, but
this
was Wax Jacket. This was your haven. It was
prawn sandwiches, crusts off,
prawn sandwiches, every Range Rover you can name under the sun as you're coming through. And as you turn through the gate, everyone just stopped what they were doing and followed the bus. And, and you'd look down, your family were in that car park somewhere. You try and find them. You knew where they would pop out and you could wave at them. But it was that sort of sense of, right, we've arrived now. It's game day. You've been on a 25-minute journey from Pennyhill Park. You're looking at people in the cars, you're trying to spot how many are going to the game with England jerseys on. And then you turn in and then the atmosphere just changes. It gets serious because then everyone follows the bus to where it comes in, turns around here, and you get off and you're surrounded by the loyal Twickenham West End crowd.
Before that, and before the bus journey, etc., what is the morning of an England game like? What time do you wake up thinking, let's get into it? Do you think, oh my God, you know, do you do self-doubt? Do you eat masses? Do you eat nothing? What is the morning like?
Do you know what? It's such a unique experience, because so much of the week you spend out the mix.
So this is the pinnacle, this is the weekend, this is what you're heading for. But so much of the time you don't really feel like you're part of it, you're isolated, you're training, you're with your friends, you're kind of relaxed and enjoying yourself. And then, you know, you get to this game day and it's by far and away the best day. You have a little bit of nerves, you're at Penny Hill.
When you say a little bit of nerves, do you sleep the night before?
Yeah, so when I first started, I was much more kind of nervous and didn't really know what to happen. But I worked so hard on my routine. One of the reasons I spoke to a sports psychologist all those years ago was to kind of get a pattern. And actually, back in the day, you were allowed to have your partners come. So on a Friday evening, your partner would come. They weren't allowed in the dining room, so you'd have to eat your dinner with the lads, take a plate of food for them in the room. You'd sit, maybe watch a movie. You'd kind of relax. And then you wake up in the morning, and a lot of people have different kind of routines. You'd end up having kind of a different vibe. I wasn't a massive eater when I first started. I was kind of quite chilled about what I was doing. But my routine kind of quite changed a little bit. But I was very meticulous. My room used to be a bit of a mess, but on game day, I would tidy everything in around the room, pack my bag properly, be really prepared, had a checklist, because I used to wake up dreaming that I'd forgotten my boots. You know, those moments, and left a gum shield. So I was quite good about that. I'd eat quite lightly. I would try and maybe do a proper warm-up before I actually got onto the bus. We'd have some meetings. And then, as Tin says, when you come here, as you get into Twickenham, you start seeing the build-up, you suddenly go, oh, this is why we're here. You start seeing the excitement. Yeah. And you get through here, and obviously, as Tin said, it's changed. But since they built this route in here, everybody just starts herding towards the bus. And you've got your music on, you're feeling quite good. And when I first started playing, I'd watch kind of highlight reels or watch bits of Rich McCorbley, bizarrely, even before an England game. But then by the end of it, I was watching Dave Chappelle, kind of very relaxed, kind of quite enjoying myself, chuckling. But you come off the bus, and suddenly when you walk out, that kind of fresh, or depending when it is, that fresh kind of winter air hits you. You hear the sound of the crowd, where we're standing now, and it just starts buzzing. People start cheering, and you're like, oh my God, I feel like 7 foot tall here. This is why I've done this. This is why I spent all week. Wow, we're actually got a massive game here. And then you cast your sight onto Twickenham, and you're like, this is home. This is the best place that you're ever going to play. And as you get, you wait for the captain, put your headphones, and everyone sort of goes, that nod, ready? Yeah. And you just walk through. And as you come through, and we'll talk about it in a minute, through the other side of this poppy gate, the crowd's lining it, and you can see them hanging off the rafters. England versus South Africa for today. People will be all over this, kind of chanting their heads off. And it's mega. And everybody prepares differently. Some players won't eat. Some players will overindulge, you know. But for me, it's so particular routine. But when we come here, it's all together.
They often say that when it's done, the bits you miss the most are... is the anticipation and the preparation and the we're about to do this. Is that the same for you, or do you miss the beer having done it? Possibly all of it.
You can't
replicate that anticipation in many other walks of life.
No, you can't. And you know, the only day that I would be quite routinely was a game day. So it would be a seven. I would get up at before seven, go for breakfast, then I'd go back to bed.
Yeah.
So you surprised me. So it's all about eating for me. Yeah. But yeah, you know, and you then go through your... I would always pack my bag the night before because I'd always, like, just in case I overslept. And I might have to go straight from there to the bus. You know, everything was always prepared. But when you get here, it is so unique. You know, the journey down the bus, Clive was always at the front shaking your hand as you went off. You step out, and then every time a player steps out, there's a roar. And that is when the electricity in your body sort of kicks in fully. And then I never wore earphones. I always like to hear everything that, you know, someone might say something negative. And I was like, right, fuel for the bank. You know, Michael Jordan, he walked past the coach and he ignored him. Right, that's a slight against me. I'm going to punish you tomorrow. That was always sort of the way I looked at it. I wanted to hear the cheer, but I wanted to hear if someone was getting in my ear and whether they had some good banter about it. So when we go through the gates and then we head towards the tunnel, you'd always have the flagman and that was it. Your brain was on.
Michael Jordan, Michael Tindall.
Yeah,
I was going to say echelons.
It's interesting about the music thing, because you know a lot of people do want to soak that up. Actually, when I first started playing, I was probably one of the only players on the bus 2007 with headphones on. It wasn't kind of done.
Yeah.
But I quite like wearing the headphones because you know, like you see montage videos of people. I basically was watching life with unbelievable tunes in my head, or whatever it might be. So you were seeing people cheering to this feel-good track, and it just. that combination of that music and that intensity, and I think the beauty about Twickenham, it's synonymous with my childhood, coming here and playing in the under-15s cup, and that magic and the smell of the grass, you know, frying onions, all that kind of stuff. As soon as you come out here, and Tin says, the crowd going, you stand in this area, which has obviously all been foofed up now, but before it was kind of, I don't know what it was, just basic tarmac.
Muddy car park.
And they didn't have these wonderful gate, or they did, yeah. But they weren't as kind of nice. And then you sort of go through it, and it's amazing, honestly. The best thing is now
is you get people who wear the earphones but don't play the music.
Yes.
So they want people to think they're listening to music, but they're not.
Is that right?
It's gone full circle, yeah.
Thank you. It is very, very special being here, particularly in the hours before a game. I want to get more about the psychology of arriving here. Let's wander inside. We'll go through the rose and poppy gates, and we'll just have a little look at where the players go into the tunnel. So we're inside the stadium, and you just get a sense of how much there is to be done on game day. I mean, there are thousands of people delivering champagne and pies and sandwiches and programmes. You've seen the lager signs. But this is obviously where the players will arrive, and what they'll do is they'll disappear down a very small door just to the right of us. The spirit of rugby, which is the sort of the home of Twickenham, is directly in front of us. You've already set that scene around what it's like, because around us, around you as a player, you will have thousands and thousands of people cheering. There was Mr. England back in your day with the flag. And
that Mr. England's funny. He, when we used to go through, he used to whip that flag around. Almost, he hit me a couple of times, and it was like a joke. And when we ran out of the tunnel, he did the same thing. At Tate's one side, again, if you hit me with that flag one more time, mate, I'm going to snap it.
Right.
Throw it in the bin. He was like, oh, we're having a bit of laugh. I was like, no, you've almost taken my eye out five times. Please stop doing it.
That was before Nice Hask.
That was before Nice Hask.
But
yeah.
Wasn't there in your day, there was also a lady who always used to give you a rose who stood by the door?
A tradition.
A tradition. It was nothing to do with the RFU. She had a tradition, so it was like her lucky thing was to always give away a rose. I mean, as you walk through, this is where you'd sort of look around, and every tier of the stairs would just have people on it. It was a very unique sort of experience walking through.
Did that fire in you just an extraordinary excitement, or did you ever feel the weight of 82,000 people here at Twickenham, millions watching on television, scribes in the press box ready to sharpen their quill? I mean, did you ever think about the bigger picture of what you were doing and the spotlight that you were stepping into, or were you just here to play rugby?
I definitely never thought about the scribes who were sharpening their quill.
We're painting pictures today. You're told by Shara, paint pictures with your words.
It always made me excited. That was the best thing that, I think one of the best things that I had going for me was I just got excited. It made me more pumped to be out there. And you ran through what you talked about in the week, I did in my head, but it was all about energy at that point, and feed off everyone else's energy.
And did you keep it really, really simple, or were you trying to sort of map everything out as to how you wanted the game to go? Or
no, just keep it simple.
Head to snooze in the changing room.
Music started for me in the changing rooms, but it was just about feed off the atmosphere, remember why you're playing, who you're playing for, and then feed off the energy.
So as a player, you know, people say, oh, sports people, you have to have a level of arrogance, you have to kind of have that self-belief to kind of be performed, quite selfish. And actually, a lot of time, certainly myself, you're very, very reflective on trying to improve and trying to get better. But actually, this walk between the bus, where we're standing now, and in that changing room, with the drums, you've got bands playing, you've got the lady who hands the rose, you've got the flagman, you've got, as Tin said, everyone hanging off the drum, you suddenly feel like important, you suddenly feel like I'm actually something. This is why I'm doing this. This is that kind of, you have that elation 100%, and I just go, wow, it was addictive. It's like a drug. It's you get a little bit of that, and you're like, flipping it, I'm big time. For this moment, for this next 80 minutes or next 2 hours, I'm the real deal. And I'm the honour of putting that shirt on, knowing you're the best person in your position for that day, knowing you have to have a challenge. And sometimes when you're playing games, you kind of have that fear of like, I'm going to have to go to a pretty dark place here. I'm going to have to really push myself. But when you came here on the bigger stage, it made you believe in yourself more. Yeah. It's very weird. You know, if you're playing against one man, his dog, and you're playing the All Blacks, you're like, oh God, this is going to be hard work. Or playing like South Africa like we are today, it's going to be physical, it's going to be tiring. There's going to be some moments where you'll be out on your feet. But here, that extra element, that crowd, that buzz, that atmosphere builds you up. And then as you walk into the tunnel, there's just lads have got a little bit of a bowl to them. You know, you walk in, and because we're professional, everything's laid out, everything's ready to go, you've got your routine, you're like high-fiving guys, and that kind of buzz, you sort of feel all aches and pains that you had in the week, because sometimes you can get into game day where you feel a bit like, oh, back's a bit sore here, you'd roll and be like, okay, let's go, and you'd have that real magic, and it is definitely addictive. And I'd say one of the things that I do miss is that sense of being someone, that sense of identity, that sense of importance that you had on these game days.
Yeah,
but you'd also, I mean, everyone who works here has their routine as well.
Yeah,
so you, the
the groundsman will just pop out, and he just wants to high five everyone as he walks past, and it's everyone feels good about it, and it's that feeling of togetherness throughout, not throughout the RFU, but throughout the people who prepare and get you ready for a Saturday.
Yeah.
And it's just nice. You see everyone pop out, don't they? And they all want to give you a quick high five. Good luck.
You're the stars of the show. It's fascinating listening to you, because I think often you guys, you don't recognise how lucky you are. Mm. There are millions of people who will wake up on Saturday morning, England, South Africa, who would give a huge amount to be able to experience a drop.
You're so right about that. Because actually, the pre-battle, the pre-war you're going to have, everything's on the table.
Yeah.
Post-game, when it's the job's been done, that's when you start going, you know, opinions are being made.
Yeah.
You've either won or you've lost. But this, it's the kind of
the anticipation,
but it's also the unwritten book of what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And actually, I love that. And that is the exciting part, because sometimes when you finish a game, you actually go, do you know what? I don't think other people would like to have what we're about to go through, because we've lost, crowds booed you, whatever's happened. But if you've won, or you've had this pre-moment, this is why everyone would want to do it.
You made a really good point about getting yourself ready to go to a dark place, particularly taking on South Africa. I also remember Lawrence saying he used to go to some pretty dark places before he played. I wasn't quite sure whether
was that on Nights Out?
Well, I was saying, was that literal or metaphorical? I wasn't entirely sure. But I want to get into that with you a bit more. Let's go inside the stadium, and I want to find out what it is like to get ready to take on South Africa. Let's go for one. Well, as we walked in here, you quite simply said, this is my church. That sort of sums it up, really. I mean, I think if you've been there and done it on this pitch, I imagine it just always feels special. But around us, we've got 82,000 green seats, empty for now. But my God, it's going to get noisy later on. We've got everyone in the background trying the old volume levels and trying on the graphics. And pitch behind us looks absolutely immaculate. The pitch is incredible. And it just is the calm before the storm. And actually, you guys probably would never have experienced the eerie silence of early match day, because when you arrive it's all incredibly noisy. But just in terms of, we were talking outside about how you get yourselves ready mentally for a day like this. Did you ever think about, because I mean, when you think about some of the injuries you picked up, were you lacerated a kidney or something, or liver, or
yep, just over there actually.
But I wonder whether you ever were thinking about the potential of what the day held for you, particularly taking on South Africa. There was something so raw about England, South Africa. Did you ever let your mind wonder about what might happen, or was it always just about the game plan?
I'd be lying if I said my mind didn't wonder, and it always started with great things and always finished in catastrophe, and it was generally an injury, actually, when I was planning out how things would go, and you go through your sort of mental balance. I'd do something wonderful, but at the end of it I'd get injured.
Right.
It sums it up, really. But no, you get this eerie silence on the day before when you come and do your team run here. That's where it's silence, and you sort of, that's where you sort of have that, just the Lawrence Dallaglio sniffing moment where you fill your lungs with the air of it. And no, it's a special place, but yeah, once you get to game day, it's more about excitement.
So you never did, because actually, one of the things I would say working with the two of you is the more we interview elite level sports people, certainly within rugby, the weirder I think you all are.
Yeah.
I mean, what you put yourselves through in 80 minutes in front of everybody is extraordinary. It's a really odd thing to get your head round if you're not into rugby.
I mean, what Tins was saying, it's interesting about that kind of the mindset and the visualisation. So one of the things, again, I said outside the stadium about kind of the preparation using the music and the notes, I use a lot of visualisation because it's such a powerful tool. But just like Mike, I would sometimes see myself doing bad things, and what she taught me was to stop, revisualise that you're doing it well. So you kind of see, you're walking around and you think, my God, imagine I sidestep here or did this or ran or scored or put a big hit in. And what happens if I missed it? No, stop. Imagine myself doing it right. Correcting yourself constantly. It's a really interesting thing. And I'd stop, you know, in the week, set my timer on my phone or my watch, 2 minutes, visualise myself, my tackling, my breakdown, running with the ball. So when you actually came here, I was so prepared that I couldn't wait to get out for the warm-up, because, again, this field and the surface is the best you're going to play on. And it was so, so good. When you came out here, you had a bit more of a spring to your step. You'd have, as we ran out for the warm-up, you'd have the crowd would start to be in there, you'd be cheering, you'd have the bands. And again, you just feel utterly great. And especially when you're playing someone like South Africa, you know, for someone like myself, it's that massive, massive physical challenge. It's a bit of a man test. You know, that you're going to find out whether you've got something about yourself, because you have to tackle them low. You know, the reason why a lot of people don't tackle low is because it's
or they think it's harder. It's easier to, you see all these people wrestling upper bodies and hitting upper bodies. That's easy. Anyone can do that. Yeah. But it takes a lot of balls to go and take someone's knees out and properly put your head where it hurts. And those days, I would just think about building up and that kind of intensity. We'd have a good warm-up. We'd go in, and then you come back out, or so you get together as and do the team warm up out on the field, and it would be amazing. And there's just that real physical edge. You'd be so pumped up, and then when you go back in, put your shirts, and come back out for the anthem. Honest to God, you would feel just so fired up.
Yeah.
Honestly, you'd take on anybody. As soon as that anthem's finished, and you look up, and you're hugging your mates, you spend all week there. You're looking up in the stand. You might see your family. You might see your friends.
Did you look for them?
I would always know where my parents were because you kind of know where the seats
are.
You could hear them. You could hear my dad's terrible jokes. Blah, blah, blah. And I'd stand there, and you'd spot them, and you'd just finish that anthem and say, you know, ready to go, and it was just magical because you'd be like, I'm so fired up. I'd run through a wall. I'd take on anybody. I'd fight Tyson Fury in that moment. I mean, I wouldn't get filled in, but I'd have a good go at it.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that's doubled for South Africa because you know the mentality.
Your rugby career.
Yeah.
It's not like it'd take long to get filled in.
Yeah.
But then you talk about visualization. You always walk out. There'd always be a second round. Hasker was one as well with the imaginary ball. Always catching the restarts, positioning and restarts, imagining. Getting, I mean, everyone has that role within it, and everyone has their sort of procedure, their what they do on each game day. And like from other players, it's a respect of that. You respect other people's process because ultimately, once they've done their process, it's all about
and
the team.
And that's really interesting because you were, I mean, unsurprising, you are incredibly relaxed, and that sounds like the way you were as a player. But the greatest insight any sort of amateurs will ever get into what it takes and what those moments are like is living with Lions in 97. And I dread to think the number of times that people have retched at Neil Jenkins because, you know, that was just one of the great themes, is him being violently sick before taking on South Africa for the Lions. Were there characters like that? Or is who were the most sort of, you just sort of had to let them get on with it?
So, who are the big spewers? I mean, obviously, he was...
Tim Payne.
Aggressive. Payne,
really?
Who always
Tim
spewed,
Payne.
Yeah.
Well, not necessarily a spewer, just a very aggressive gagger. And it's like, when you...
And is that nerves, or is that...
It's nerves. Like, I'd never been sick before a game, but if you were in the huddle, and I'd gagged a couple of times out in the field, it happened more often.
And
if you were really fired
up...
That's
just raw fear.
It's not fear. It's kind of that, that excitement, that trepidation, that kind of... but is everything rolled into one. It's like, you know, you're going to have to go hard. You're excited to be here. You want to play. What's coming? What's coming? We run out to here, and this on a day when it's full is like a cauldron for those first initial minutes.
Yeah.
And then you're looking across to another team that want to take your head off, and you want to take their heads off. And it's like, are you going to do well? What's going to happen?
Yeah.
And we have all those nerves. It just comes out. But I was never a spewer, but sometimes it would set me off. Right. So I'd be sitting there, and you'd already be a bit nervous, ready to go, and a bit excited. Someone starts gagging, you'd be like, I couldn't look at people. There's sometimes in huddles, I've got my arms around people, my head to the side, just going, please, I can't do this.
Right.
But then I've had other players who shout to make themselves up for it, which can be a bit awkward, because you're like, hold on a minute, you've never tackled anyone, so shut up. And they're going, come on, we're going to do this, we're going to F that. And you're like, listen, go steady. But you have to let them be, as Mike said, you just got to let them
float. Worst line I've ever heard in the stadium, under 18s, and there's a winger called Tim Southall, as he's walking through the change room, come on, lads! This is the second battle of Agincourt.
Oh,
and I was
no.
like, sorry, what?
Oh,
Jesus. Oh, brush your
stinky.
Teeth, mate. Yeah.
Who's done that?
Yeah.
As a Northern lad, I was like, what?
How do you spell Agincourt? but take me inside that. You're mob in 03. Because I always remember Will Greenwood saying that he used to suffer hugely with nerves and self-doubt. He came on the show and was talking about that.
Yeah.
And he, I think, has given the line before where he said he and Martin Johnson used to sit next to each other or whatever it was, and they would look at each other and go, why do we put ourselves through this? It's such a horrendously intense experience. Obviously, you get out and you do what you do, but you were in the corner just quietly going about it. But who were the guys who you just sort of... Because the antithesis of what you're talking about in terms of that, the guys who just can't stop, is someone like Dean Richards, who famously just used to sit outside and read the paper and say, bro, let's go.
The best on that, Gareth Archer.
Really?
Oh, my God. Would just sit in his pants, reading a book. Italy, Stadio Flaminio. Back in the day, 15 minutes before the warm-up, still reading the book. 5 minutes before the warm-up, still reading the book. Dorsey's like, mate, we've got to get together. We've got to get in just 2 seconds, just finish the chapter. I'm like, we're going to have to play an international arch. actually went out, killed someone, got sent off.
Right. that was Gareth, you could do that if you're seven foot two.
That was Gareth Archer. I mean, he was a whole different level in terms of like the ability to just like put down my book. Yeah. Let's go kill someone.
Owen Redding used to read a book. That's how he used to do the Irish scrum half. Yeah. Very much kind of used to read the book and stuff before internationals. And there was another Irish prop, Peter Brackett, who kind of was trying to find his way. You know, you see people do habits and behaviours and you want to get it. He's Irish as well. And he decided to bring a book in. Didn't have quite the same effect when he sat down and opened it. It was An Idiot's Guide to Ireland. You're like, what are you doing? He's reading something and he's reading this book on his own country. It's like, Pete, it's not for you, mate. It's not for you. Just relax.
That's unwrapping the myth a little bit. You know, I grew up in the 90s, and I remember England Grand Slams 91-92 having an enormous kind of impact on me as a 10-year-old and 11-year-old, and I remember the pictures of the French props coming out of the Parc des Princes bloodied, and you know, they'd been headbutting the wall, and that sort of romanticism became one of the foundation stones around, but that's just truly gone.
There is some of those romantic ideals still around, but it's actually more micro conversations. It's Eddie will walk up to a couple of people, just ask about the role, mate, I need this from you today, don't overthink it. You'll get the front row, we'll have a chat about whatever front row talk about. Yeah. The backs will have a little bit of a meeting. Then, you know, the captains will talk, but actually, for some captains who aren't kind of probably the most articulate, you've then got the other guys, they'll turn to and go, you know, say last couple of words from Mike. Yeah. They'll set the tone. Actually, when you come out here, it's more about kind of that attention to detail stuff. But there will be a couple of moments, I think, when you finish the anthem where everyone sort of roars.
Yeah.
It's kind of quite carnal, quite animalistic.
Yeah.
You finish like, come fucking
fireworks,
come on. I'll be like,
smoke.
Fucking come on. Yeah, do you know what I mean? You'd be like, so, it gives me goosebumps talking about it now.
Yeah.
Just that kind of intensity, like, right, we're ready to go here. All, everything, your whole culmination, every sacrifice you've made, every holiday you've missed, every extra session you've done, every, you know, cheat meal you haven't eaten, every party you haven't gone to, all of it culminates in this, and you look at it and you can't stop smiling, can't stop buzzing, because you're like, this is the greatest situation, greatest opportunity ever.
You put that really well.
Well, thank you.
Sort of just, it just hypes the flames of what so many people love to do. As a skipper, you know, in there, I just love to know two or three things. Rousing speech.
Yeah, no,
a look.
Play the room, really. You've got to understand your soldiers that are around you. So some people, as Hass said, need to shout.
Yeah.
So you let them shout. So you can rely on them to do the basic instinctive, like getting up for it, which just involves noise and pomp. And I was always about key messages that we've taken away from the week. Like Hass said, it a bit like your coach would do. I'd be reinforcing something that, you know, whether it be with nine, look, we want a quick. Whether it be Young Z, we need quick taps, many quick taps as we can. I'll always be there. I'll be on your outside. You go. Yeah. Don't worry. If I'm not there, it's my fault. You know, those sort of little things, or if you want to lift this, if we talked about speed of lineouts, jogging to lineouts, getting in, getting the ball in play quicker, all that sort of, that was sort of more what I tried to focus on, was little reminders of specifics, because a lot of people took care of the emotional side. So I was always just making sure that people still had those specifics, or things that we had notified during the week that were specific to this game, just keep firing those back in. And then reassuring words for people who are younger, or people who might have had spoke to me in the week about doubts, you're reassuring them, and you're lifting their egos a bit before they go out, going, I know you're going to smash it today.
And then the knock. See, that's the bit, just as an absolute noise. It's the knock and the tunnel, and that just sort of run out, and we can hear the tunnel now going through.
Hello!
Twickenham!
That's the beauty of filming here early. Everyone's
don't work
getting
with
out
children,
getting
animals, or Twickenham announcers.
Practicing tunnel announcers. And then the knock, walk out, tunnel.
Yeah,
I mean, you have to feel invincible at that, don't you?
Yeah. Also, people feel that something's got to happen. Is there a squeeze, or is there?
Yeah.
You know, everyone's gone through. Loads of different routines about how you pull people together. The old squeeze is always just a great one. You still do it at amateur rugby. I love that.
Yeah. Roll the shoulders.
Yeah, amateur rugby. It's a quick slug of pause. Yeah. And a sort of quick hamstring bounce.
But yeah, it's always that knock is right. We're on. And everyone's got their own way of doing it. It's basically a little bit of chaos it comes in, because everyone goes, right, we are going out there.
Sometimes in certain games you go straight out, you don't necessarily have that kind of weight. Here you've got that big setup.
Yeah.
So you've got a floor manager
going
5-4-3-2-1 to the cats. And then
it's
walk out. It's a show, and you've got the mascots, and as you walk out,
because it's everything's bigger and better on these days. As you walk out, the flame cannons go off. You know, the smoke, the fireworks. That's my childhood, sitting here in these green seats, looking.
Should we sing?
Yeah.
Oh, she's a galady, Africa. Keep going. Too much or keep going? Let's quickly, let's do two more minutes on.
Fine, and I say, when you come out, and the anthems are going in the background here, but when you came out and you sat in that tunnel on the show, right, and you had those fireworks and the kind of thing, as my childhood, when you looked down the field, it was kind of smoke strewn, and kind of the fireworks, the flames, settle, the referee checking on his mic and goes, I'd always be staring at my opposition, or the biggest bloke on the field, and I'd look at his knees, and because my process for tackling was always focused on the knees, and I'd be there looking, going, right, you're going to get it, and just going through that whole mental process. And then you have that moment, and he goes, sends you in. You're like, right, that's all on. And it's mad. That first second, it's like mad because there's the anticipation, and then it hits you. And you're like, this is game day, baby.
I go back to that bit, though, about the more I work with you and the more we talk to top-level people, the more that psychology is actually just generally quite weird.
Yeah.
There are not many people in everyday walks of life who walk around just feeling... Sorry, it was for the grandmother, sorry.
I belted it out, like you wouldn't believe, and I got the worst voice. That's what I love. Gripping your leg.
You know when the camera goes down the line, you can hear it. Often it's a bit like, whoa.
I
was a singer until the camera came along.
I would belt it.
Mouth mode, and then what's he got again?
Belong to reign over us. God save the Queen.
I keep saying, you don't know how lucky you are. You do. How much would you love to do it today?
Well, do you know what? I would, but because I can feel how bad my ankle is, my back's a bit sore, I just know I'd be awful.
That goes on the bus journey and the walk.
If you could take it away, I'd go out there today, no problem.
I was just thinking, my Twickenham experience changed. 1995, I sat middle tier, the wooden seats back then.
Wow.
And that's where my first time here.
Yeah.
I watched a school, but it was a Daily Mail schoolboys game.
Was it?
And I was like, fuck, I'm going to play on that pitch.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Were you number 8 back then?
I just probably changed, yeah.
Amazing. What was your first ever game here?
France versus New Zealand.
You don't need to cry about it.
So emotional. Tears of excitement.
France versus New Zealand. World
that
Cup.
Start.
In that one where France beat them. That was unbelievable. Sitting up there in the nosebleeds. Just amazing.
Should we go see where I scored on for debut?
Well, hopefully that gives you just a little bit of insight. It was really, really enjoyable, actually. And I'm not sure I've seen the two of you as buzzed as you were. I mean, you were ready to play again.
I was, in a very limpy manner.
Yeah. Hopalong Cassidy.
And the tannoy slightly stressed me out at one point, but that was quite good. I remember I shouted. That woman was like doing a mic test at one point.
Yeah.
And we're like shouting, shut up!
Yeah, she wasn't listening.
Right.
Do you miss it?
Look, you miss occasions like that we had on the weekend, and those wins, those wins can't ever be matched, and you will always miss those till the day you die. As has touched upon the crowd and how well the crowd got into it. Yeah, I was very fortunate to play in that sort of period 2000-2003 where we just didn't lose at Twickenham. The crowd were just on the outstanding every single time. I did also play where we didn't win very much, and the crowd didn't really enjoy it that much. So, no, it was just great to be back there. And obviously, the greatest quote ever by Roginald Poulton Palmer, where he
Ronald Poulton.
Ronald,
yeah, not Roginald.
I said
Roginald.
Roginald. Ronald. Sorry,
Ronnie Poulton.
Where he obviously got shot and he was dying in the Eeps, and he goes, I'll just never get to play on Twickenham again.
It's a very good way to go out.
If I got shot, I'd be like, I'll never get nosed at Twickenham again as I bled out.
You get shot by someone on their way to Twickenham.
I would. I get shot by a fan.
The unfortunate thing is the other 14 players on his team have just drilled him in the
face. Yeah, exactly. Platoon style. Well, hopefully it was interesting. Hopefully it let you in on a bit of the insight of, I suppose, the madness that must be being a top-level international sportsman at the moment. We have said that more often than not recently. Just before we go, our regular Spiz section and a couple of shout-outs to two runners doing extraordinary things. Sir Kevin Sinfield, who we've had on the show before and is just A remarkable, remarkable
just
man.
Just gets more and more super, doesn't he?
He does. He needs to be super Sir Kevin Sinfield before too long. He's back out on the road again. In fact, he may well be finished by the time you're listening to this. Raising money for the Leeds Hospitals charity and Motor Neurone Disease Association, obviously in accordance with his great mate Rob Burrows, who's got his own battles at the moment with MND. 101 miles he is running in 24 hours, looking to raise... I mean, how on earth do you even set out on that? Looking to raise 100 grand. When I checked a bit earlier, he was already at $250,000, so he's going to blast another record run total in that regard. If you'd like to get involved in that, please do have a look at the Extra Mile Challenge and give a quid or two to Sir Kev. At the opposite end of the spectrum, I also want to mention an 11-year-old called Toby, who has set himself the challenge of running 1K for every point scored against Bristol Bears in the Premiership this season. He is doing it the week before they play again. He is raising money for St. Peter's Hospice, who looked after his grandmother before she lost her battle to cancer last year. So, Toby, it's a remarkable effort. She was a big Briz fan. His dad, Giles, has told us he's done incredibly well so far, even with London Irish putting 33 points on Bristol the weekend before last. So he had to do 33K, which is an 11-year-old last week, a week before last. It's quite an effort. If you want to show your support for Toby, he's got lots of people falling in behind him, at Toby's Bearathon or on Twitter, at TBearathon. I think Stephen Merchant has given him a shout-out as well. So good luck with that, Toby. Keep us posted on your progress. And last but not least, we are off to Northern Ireland this coming weekend.
Completely forgot about that.
It's going to be fun.
That will be fun.
Pre-weekend dialysis required for our next leg of the Vodafone Lions Legacy Tour, supporting grassroots clubs' return to rugby, obviously playing an enormous role in their local communities. We're off to Dungannon, as we said, which is one of the Canterbury Lions Origins clubs. We've got Stephen Ferris, we've got Tyrone Howe and Jill Burkle joining us. On the day, the three of us are going to be doing our bit around the club before doing a live show in the clubhouse in the evening. Vodafone are providing tech solutions and digital education that will support Dungannon's performance, financial sustainability and online presence. Very important in the 21st century. We know it's going to be a biggie after the last 18 months and hopefully we'll be putting a couple of quid in the coffers for Dungannon as well, which will be much needed as clubs get back to doing what they should be doing and doing best. To top all this off as well, Canterbury are throwing in new boots for everybody. We are looking forward to getting back on the road and getting stuck in off the back of a really fun day at Westbury. So if you're in the Dungannon RFC area on Saturday, come along for what should be a blast. And if you can crack Tin's WhatsApp chat, come and join us in the evening as well. Or maybe not. Yeah. Only for the lively. Why are you looking at me like that? It's a joke. You're looking really worried all of a sudden.
No.
No, you're not.
You should be worried.
Can't wait to get back on the road and get
stuck
in.
You've got a 7:45 a.m. flight.
Shamateur. That's it for this week. Hopefully a bit of a debrief on what has been a mega November of international rugby. Hopefully a little bit of insight as to what the England players went through on Saturday. Well done, fellas. Onwards and upwards. See you on Saturday in Dungannon. We've been the good, the bad and the rugby, but from all of us, bye for now.
Thank you so much for listening to the good, the bad and the rugby. It can't have been easy.